You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, because it's a wonderful podcast, and we are back in our season player review series. We've done, I think, 8 or 9 players. We've gone through the centers. We've gone through the free agents. And now we're to the guards. That's this week and next week. And on today's podcast, we're going to break down Malcolm Brogdon's season with the Pacers. We'll talk about his good and bad skills this season, where his future lies with this Pacers team. Does he stay? Does he get traded? What does his contract look like? All that stuff, we'll break that down. But first, we're going to start with, as always, one word to describe a player's season with the Pacers. And for Brogdon, the word is steady. Brogdon averaged 21.2 points, 5.9 assists, and 5.3 rebounds in 56 games for the Pacers. He played 34.5 minutes per game, took 17.5 field goals per game, and shot a pretty solid 45% from the field, 39% from the line, and 86% from the free throw line. He definitely improved year two with the Pacers. So Brogdon's baseline best season of his career probably has to be 2018-19, where he played in 64 games and shot 50-40-90. Obviously, that's with the Bucks, where he was the number three option on that team, behind a MVP-level Giannis Middleton, who's probably an all-star that season, and then him. He came to Indiana, and he had good raw numbers. Not as great efficiency his first season. He shot just 32.6% from two seasons ago now for the Pacers. But he had a nice recovery this year, back to kind of, I would say, closer to career average numbers, right? On his career, he's a 46 from the field and 39 from three. So roughly his career average where he's at. Obviously scored more points he's ever scored in a season this year. Part of that is volume. Actually, most of that is volume, right? Brogdon had really the last season to take the most shots ever. So he took 14 shots per game in his first season with the Pacers and 17.5 last season. So that's up from about 12 a game with the Bucks. So he is taking more shots, playing more minutes, scoring more points, but also is not as efficient. But this year was definitely in the more efficient line. The reason I say he's steady is he provided a consistent hand. When he played, it was a consistent number for the Pacers. He basically over and over again was obviously between somewhere 15 and 25 points, always putting up 5 assists, 5 rebounds. And he, you know, would occasionally have a pop game here where he'd have, you know, 15 rebounds or have 10 assists, but a lot of times it was just consistency over and over again when he played. Now, where the one place where he wasn't steady was in his ability to actually play games. He ended up missing the last 10 regular season games and spread out his games here or there. Considering his career history, him playing 56 of 73 games, which I believe gets you a number in like the mid-70s for games played, is actually pretty solid percentage-wise. So if you do a full season, if he ended up playing 75% of the season like he did this season, he would have ended up playing about 60 games, which is about where he's at career average-wise. If you look at kind of his games played, first season where he kind of was a half starter, he played 75 games, 48 in year two, 64 in year three, 54 in year four in first year with the Pacers, and 56 this year. So he clearly is not a guy who's ended up playing 70-plus games a season. I just think that's not the player he is. But if you get 65 out of him, you're probably pretty golden. And this season, 56 was equivalent to 65 games, essentially, maybe a little less. So pretty good year from him on that end. Obviously, his offensive jump, whatever you want to call it, did not translate to wins with the Pacers. That's a concerning thing to me, is that he had probably his best season in his career just because of pure points and because of, really, he shot well enough from three that, like, it was a really good year for the volume he shot on, and it really didn't translate to any more wins for the Pacers. Brogdon, I think, is one of many Pacer players who fits better as a three, as a two, not as a one. This season, you could say Sabonis was the one, but I feel like at times Brogdon was the first option, and that isn't always the best place for him. But he has proven to be a point guard, that's for sure. Already came in the Pacers, there was questions, could he play point guard? He played shooting guards last year, slash small forward with the Bucks. But he had a pretty good season in terms of like a turnover ratio, right? And ended up being around three, which is pretty solid for a point guard. You know, the high-end point guards are at four, sometimes even five. You're like Chris Paul. I think if you go to Chris Paul's stats this year, he ended up somewhere like within like the 4 to 5 range. But three is really solid. It means you're an okay point guard. If you just kind of rank the point guards this season, you look at some of the stats. I mean, Brogdon's kind of middle of the pack in most of the stats for four point guards. Not like nothing. I guess nothing special, but was good enough and was really has probably been the best. Really, the best pacer point guard. You can go back a long ways. I mean, you might be going back to like the Mark Jackson days even, right? So like if you go to the Pacers point guards where it's like a Mark Jackson, Jamal Tinsley, and then it was like TJ Ford, then it became George Hill, then it went Darren Collison who had two stints, and then it's been Brogdon. Well, Jeff Teague for a season also, and then Brogdon. And, you know, he had probably a better year than really any of those players outside of maybe a George Hill season there, but Pacers just really haven't had a history of really, really good point guards. And Brogdon had a good season. I mean, he is probably one of the better point guards in the league, frankly. In terms of, like, he's probably in the top half, right? If you go to kind of point guards, he probably ranks in the, like, 12 to 15 range, which is actually pretty solid considering, like, where Pacers have been in the past where they've barely been able to scrap probably a top 20 point guard. Darren Collison comes to mind recently. Was like really good in small spurts, but wasn't nearly like a top 10 or 15 point guard in the league. Where, frankly, Brogdon is probably in that kind of range. I mean, I think you pull up, so go like points per game for point guards. He ended up ranking actually sixth in points per game. Now that isn't always. Let's go the right. I'm looking at the posting stats. I'm sorry. You go to point guards, points per game. Brogdon ranked ninth, not sixth. Pretty solid, but then some guys below him, like a Chris Paul, is probably ahead of him, Drew Holiday. But if you go to like assist, if you go to turnovers at the point guard spot, he also ranked kind of towards the middle of the pack in that. And assists, he ended up at 16th. So, like I said, probably somewhere between a 12th to 15th ranked point guard this season. Pretty good for what is probably the deepest position in the NBA this year. Point guard, I mean, think about it. There's the Chris Pauls, Lucas, Stephs. Jaw, Trey Young, Damian Lillard. I mean, it's a deep position this year, and so he had a pretty good year. Ironically, he got out-assisted by his own teammate in TJ McConnell. Some of that is because McConnell, I think, actually played with a better lineup where he wasn't relied on to be as much offense as Brogdon was. Like, Brogdon was kind of forced to score at times, and he actually got out-assisted by Domantas Sabonis, too, who put up 6.7 assists. But some of that, I think, is kind of the product where Brogdon was actually the team's leading shot taker. I guess him and LeVert ended up tied in terms of shots per game. But Brogdon obviously played more games with the Pacers. So part of that is just a product of the offense where Brogdon really had to be kind of the last option on offense at times because of his ability to shoot and ability to create his own shot a little better than Sabonis. So interesting season for Brogdon stats-wise. I think it says a lot about what maybe we see from the next two or three seasons as he enters kind of the prime of his career. Remember, he came in the league late. He came in the league at like 23 years old. So he will kind of be hitting that 28 to 32 window the next season. That's right in the prime of a guy's career. So I think the season's kind of a good indication of what we can expect from Brogdon going forward. But that's what I'm talking about next is some of the good and bad skills he had this season that could translate into his next season and how it will play when we finally have a Pacers roster that is healthy. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Michelob Ultra and our Ultra Player of the Week. Michelob Ultra has just 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, and they believe when you have joy, passion, and happiness, you win the game, whether you actually win the game, but it means you are winning in the game, in life. And today's Player of the Week, I think you have to go with Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think I said that right. Giannis had a fantastic game three. We are now a day removed from that Sunday performance from him. He is on a Shaq-like tear through the NBA Finals. The question will be, can he carry that Bucks team to the NBA Championships? Got to win three of the next four games. Certainly won't be easy, but he could do it. And I think Giannis is definitely enjoying himself just like you can enjoy a Michelob Ultra, 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. And we are also brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Theragun. Don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me, just trying to make it through your day tension-free is tough enough, and Theragun can help with that. Theragun is a handheld percussive device that releases your deepest muscle tensions using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power, and it's quiet as an electric toothbrush. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of the pain by releasing that tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out or an injury or just the stress of everyday life, there is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. The OLED screen and design makes you feel like you're holding something from the future. Just go to their site and check it out. And Theragun app helps you learn from your behaviors and suggest guided routines. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams and athletes, elite ones like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Mira Sharapova, hundreds of thousands of customers, and someone like me. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting only at $199. Go to Theragun.com/LockedOn, LOCKEDON, right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/LockedOn, Theragun.com/LockedOn. And we're back. So Brogdon this season did a couple of things I thought were really interesting. One, he kind of got his three-point percentage up to a point where he was taking a high enough volume, making a high enough rate where he could be considered a, maybe not elite three-point shooter, but high-level three-point shooter. The percentage where I feel like if he plays off the ball and can shoot like that, you're golden. You can stretch the floor for sure with him, right? He doesn't have to always be on the ball. I think he showed a real ability to kind of play the point guard spot. I think, you know, he had a good season 2 years ago and was the point guard and was really good. But I think it's kind of as you bring in new players, right? So you saw the interest of Caris LeVert, and I think we'll be interested when TJ Warren returns, how that meshes together. But I think Brogdon showed that he can be the point guard, let's call it 40% of the time. Right, he got his turnovers down slightly this year from 2.4 years ago to 2.1 this season. Assists weren't as high, but some of that, again, and I would say is part of the product of just the team they had. It was just not as good of a team. Where I think if you talk about, like, so you go to like assist percentage, which is sort of like passes he's basically trying to lead to assists. He was about where he was last year, a little bit less. But again, part of that is just because he has to take more shots. But he definitely felt like he was, to me, a slightly better passer this year than the year before, which shows signs of improving, which means he can play point guard about 40% of the time. And then on the defensive end, I don't think he was like as special. I thought it was in Milwaukee per se, but I do think he still showed the ability to have some size, be able to man guys up, and like, again, can be somebody who can guard 1s, 2s, or 3s at times, which is especially valuable just to have a kind of seamless player like that. Where I thought he struggled at times was he still is not like a go-to offensive player at any moment, right? He just doesn't quite have like the separation, the space, the whatever go-to move. Obviously, he's got that pretty good, like, you can kind of clear him out one-on-one, let him drive, he can score usually by using his big body to clear space and get there, but it's not like super efficient. I think sometimes he challenges the wrong guys, like he'll go after a center who's been really good defensively when he just leave him alone. And he, you know, doesn't have like a step back three or off the dribble, whatever move like that, that can get an easy bucket. But again, like I said, I think when he is playing on the ball for 40% of the time, he can kind of guide your offense, facilitate it, keep it moving. And I think it's in bigger moments, you can play him off the ball with a better facilitator or a better, you know, pure ball handler, kind of like creation player. Like I think Karras is the right example, that guy who can like really create his own shot, who if he, you know, whatever reason gets smothered, he can hit Brogdon in the corner for an open look. And I trust Brogdon to make that shot, right? He's still a pretty clutch player. I want to say he had a couple of good clutch baskets this year. I mean, I know in 2020, he definitely had a couple ones. He hit that one against the Knicks a couple years ago. This season, I can't think of any off the top of my head. I mean, I know he had some good moments in that New Orleans win early in the season. And I want to say he had another bucket or two in the end of games. I mean, he's always been a pretty decent clutch player where he can I think it was the New Orleans game he had the shot in overtime ultimately this season that ended up winning them the game. At least that was kind of the game-winning shot per se. I like what he brings to the table overall. I think he is definitely kind of a different player with Indiana than he's been with Milwaukee, and he's shown he can do it, right? I think Milwaukee, he was almost underutilized. Now, granted, Milwaukee, he's kind of, that's the role Milwaukee needs, is that, like, third option. I mean, if you imagine they could have had him and Drew Holiday, that team is all of a sudden from, like, probably, like, barely winning the finals, like, borderline probably, I mean, they might lose, who knows, to, like, definitely the finals favorite versus kind of where they are now, where I think it's, game four will be the toss-up game, ultimately. That's not a hot take. That's a take that everybody has. So nothing original there. I'm not going to click I had an original take there. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely, like, a more offensive player, definitely a more point guard, definitely more like 1B or 2 option instead of the third option that he was on the Bucks. And I do like that. I mean, I think the Pacers, like I've said over and over again, are sort of they're sort of a superstar away from being really competitive because they have lots of good second and third options, right? Brogdon's a great second option. I think so is Sabonis, so is LeVert. And I think they've got a decent bench at times. Now, granted, to probably get that one option, that 1A option, they're going to need to probably give up some of that bench and one starter. But I think they have room to give up a starter, frankly, and they could give a pick. And I just think they're kind of, they're not like in the elite class of teams, but if they had just like one of those kind of superstar level players and surround them Brogdon, Sabonis, LeVert, Warren, this team would be really, you know, it would be going somewhere at least. And so that's kind of where they're stuck in the mud right now. That's the thing about Brogdon, the kind of plays in this is that, like, he's got 2 years left on his contract, which means that he's at the point where if you're looking at the next 2 seasons and don't know what, you know, if you're going more competitive, he might be the guy to move. And so I'm going to talk about next is what Brogdon's future is like. We've already heard him being kind of a semi-trader model that was shot down. We'll go through that. But, you know, does Brogdon remain a Pacer is a big question mark, because I think he is one of the players who's not untouchable, at least at this moment. Before we talk about that, let's go to another sponsor of Locked On Pacers Podcast, and that is our wonderful friends over at rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait? The person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, chooses the only brand the warehouse happens to carry. You have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And best of all, the prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you need for your car, from tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpets. You can explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to your auto parts need. And so, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Rock Auto is a great place to go for all your auto parts needs. Rockauto.com, main selection, reliably low prices. And we are back. So, there was a semi-rumor, I don't know what to believe, because I do think J. Michael from IndyStar struck this down a little bit, but that Brogdon was offered the first-round pick for Ben Simmons. I think Pacers would make that move if they could make it. I think any team, frankly, would make that move. If it was offered there, I think Brogdon, the first-round pick, is low value for Ben Simmons, who is a top 25 player who has got a ton of talent, frankly, and Pacers would be lucky to get a guy like that. I think Brogdon is probably pretty available in the sense that, like, the right deal, then they can move him. So his contract, he's got 2 years remaining at, like, roughly $43 million. So he's on a 4-year, $85 million deal. It's a little bit of scaling, I think, is the contract. So I think he makes, like, 21 and a half, maybe 22 the next 2 seasons. Very reasonable. Obviously, take him and another player, you can start getting into, like, max player ranges. Now, the thing, if you trade him, you obviously need a replacement. So, to me, if you're moving Brogdon, you're moving him along with one of the centers to get a really, really massive contract, because they're both, I think, you're basically trading 2 starters for one and then starting, let's say, O'Shea Brissett at the 4, or maybe you're bringing, like, whoever you draft. I don't know, maybe Justin Holiday, probably not. So, that's probably what you're doing if you make a move like this. Frankly, I think that you probably keep Brogdon because try to move one of the centers and other contracts to make things work. But, I mean, if there's like a generational talent, a game-changing player, and the team decides that they want to be competitive, Brogdon in a center makes that team still competitive and against the Pacers, a really good asset, plus some picks, obviously, probably to do that. But I mean, I think if Brogdon is moved, it's probably for another point guard in some way. It's a player they feel that has equal or better value. I don't think they're trading Brogdon for a pick or any, like, just cashing on assets. Although, I will say he's got 2 years left, and, you know, you're hitting the prime of his career, so he's going to hit another contract at 29. If he has the same years he's had this year, the next 2 seasons, he's looking at a massive contract, probably in the 25 to 30 range. Now, frankly, you have his bird rights, so it should make it easier to sign him, depending on what the free agent market is, certainly. So I wouldn't put it past the Pacers to kind of have him locked in for, you know, after the, after it runs out, continuing him to manage the Pacer for the following years. They could extend him, I think, coming up this year as well. I think you could do 125% of his current salary, which means you could probably, you pay him, I think, in like the, what would that get you to, like the 25 range? So he might take it. I'm not sure if the Pacers, they want to do an extension right now. I think they're probably still kind of waiting on Brogdon, but you could do it to lock in the asset. I mean, I think the thing about Brogdon is, like I said, he's right in that prime age, 20 to 32 of his like prime career. So you're getting the best years out of him, right? That's, Brogdon has such a weird, came in the league so late and then had his second round picks and only had 3 years on his deal. So when you signed him, you actually got him for kind of his best years, right? They say players peak at 20 to 32, and then 26, 27 is maybe an early peak for them. The Pacers got lucky. I mean, I think that's why they were willing to overpay for Brogdon in some ways, is that one, he was underutilized in Milwaukee before, and two, or at least they felt that way, and two, you were getting his prime career. You weren't like paying for past performance or anything like that. You were paying, maybe overpaying for what he was probably worth at the very moment. But with the cap going up and whatnot, you're getting him right in the prime. And I think it's been a good contract. I mean, I think the Pacers would do that move 10 out of 10 times over and over again. Unless they could like get Chris Paul and like that. But the Brogdon move made a ton of sense. The pick they gave up was like, what, they picked 22 last year, 21 last year. So totally, totally worth it for Brogdon. But like I said, I don't think he's untradeable this year. I think he comes back. I think if I put it at like I put it at 90-10, he's back versus not back. It makes a lot of sense. Like I said, if you can just find how to get that another starter by flipping one of the centers, he's a perfect fit. He can play point guard, I think, 40% of the time. Then you play LeVert a little bit point guard, and maybe you have McConnell, whoever your bench guard is, or Aaron Holiday, whatever it is, playing the rest of the time at point guard with the starters. But yeah, I like Brogdon, like his contract. I think he's a good player. The question I think will come to is, I know there seems to be some rumors or some conversation that doesn't like the coaches that much, didn't like Bjorkgren. Like McMillan, but they didn't like McMillan. So we'll see how he meshes with Carlisle. But Brogdon is obviously a very thoughtful and serious player at times, I think is the best way to describe him. He obviously cares more than just about basketball, which I can play a factor in just a lot of things. But it seems like he wants to be in a situation that challenges him at times. And I do think Carlisle, who is one of the best seven coaches in the league, can probably push Brogdon in ways really none of the other Pacers coaches in the past could, because he is on his intellectual level. Now, McMillan, I'm sure, is, and Bjorkgren just couldn't connect. But I do think there's something about Carlisle with his past championship experience that sort of brings him some credibility that McMillan just didn't have. Obviously, McMillan can connect with somebody because he was awesome at the Hawks and got to Trae Young and away Lloyd Pierce couldn't. So, but there clearly was some disconnect between McMillan and Brogdon, where hopefully Carlisle will mesh well with him. But I think Brogdon is due for another good season, as long as he stays healthy. That'd be my other big concern, is can he stay healthy can he play 60 games? I mean, that would be the big thing, and I'm not sold that he can, but if he can play 50, the right 55, it'd be for the playoffs, and I think you're okay. Worked out 2 seasons ago, right? He ended up being healthy for the full bubble after would have definitely missed the playoffs if it had happened normally, so kind of a blessing for him. Even though the Pacers got swept up at the first round, it still worked. He still at least played, which is something, so we'll see how next year goes for Brogdon, but I hope he's with the Pacers, and I think he could have a good season. Let me hear your guys' thoughts on Brogdon. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Me at Freeman5, my co-host Tony's at T East NBA. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys again tomorrow.